Legal Matters.
So we're going to talk about surrogate motherhood, surrogacy, yeah? And Claire Thompson joins me now for that conversation. Claire, good evening to you, and thank you so much for joining me.
So nice to be with you again, Aubrey.
So surrogacy, and I suppose it's only obvious that we're going to talk about surrogate motherhood, right? Because, we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about all of that.
It is something that is both a very challenging conversation to have, but also one that I think needs to be had, because I think it must be the biggest act of kindness for people that want babies. And I know that it has all sorts of cultural sort of minefields that people tend to, religious and cultural minefields that people tend to talk about. And we're going to talk about that. But perhaps let's start off by understanding what surrogacy is from a general point of view.
So surrogacy in its essence is when a woman carries a baby on somebody else's or another couple's behalf. So either a single person or a couple's behalf, and gives birth to that baby and relinquishes all her parental rights and responsibilities that she would have had she gestated that baby herself, to the couple who she has carried that baby for. And as you say, I think it's an incredibly powerful act.
It's an incredibly powerful act. And I suppose that's why it draws so much controversial conversation, right? I'm aware of people that say that it is not only the ultimate sin, because it is, taking on a role that only a mom should take on in the most traditional sense of what mom means, right? But I'm also aware that we've moved on in terms of how we understand those concepts of motherhood, I have come to understand surrogacy as a very deeply spiritual and kind thing to do for another human being who needs to be a mom. But that's just me. And I'm hoping that our listeners will join us in that conversation and perhaps we can hash this out. Talk to me about surrogacy in the legal sense. What are the laws in South Africa about it? I know that there's a reality TV show at the moment on TV around that with one of our celebrities who's had an arrangement with a certain lady for surrogacy. And some of the issues are coming out in that particular reality TV show. But what is the status of surrogacy in South Africa, legally speaking?
So in terms of the Children's Act, which is this book that I bring so often when we speak.
Claire's little Bible.
It's been with me here so many times. Chapter 19 of the Children's Act governs surrogacy in South African law. And it regulates and it permits surrogacy in South African law. And I think, like so many topics that we discuss on this show, there can be so many divided opinions about, as you say, moral, religious, cultural differences of opinion about whether surrogacy should take place or it shouldn't take place. But what our legislation recognizes is that surrogacy is a practice that is permitted in our law. And if it is that intended parents wish to make use of a surrogate, and they can find somebody who is prepared to act as a surrogate for them in an altruistic fashion. This is the most important part of this, that the surrogate may not charge for her services. And we can talk a little bit more about reasonable compensation for expenses, which she is allowed. But she's not allowed to charge for gestating a baby on behalf of a couple.
Why?
It's the way that the legislation is drafted. There is an intention that this act is altruistic in nature and that it doesn't have a commercial flavor. And when this legislation was contemplated.
That somehow gives me a bit of peace. Eh? Because I think that's where the big issue has been. Mm-hmm. That people are commercializing a gestation or a pregnancy, right?
Mm.
And I didn't know that there was this prohibition of actually commercializing, of making money out of it. That's great.
Absolutely.
I think that's because I think it can be abused in that sense, yeah?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to note that different countries globally have different perspectives on surrogacy. There's some countries that disallow surrogacy totally, and then there are other countries like ours that allow surrogacy in an altruistic fashion, not for money. And then there are other countries in the world that do allow surrogacy in a commercial environment where there is a financial gain to the surrogate for her services of carrying this baby to term for the intended parents. And it's a topic I'm currently studying my master's on, is the commercialization of surrogacy. And it's a fascinating topic. And it's typically one of those that when you're doing a bit of reading on a Sunday, it can take you down a rabbit hole with all sorts of nuances about gamete donation and commercialization of this process. And it's a fascinating topic, and I think it's very, very topical at the moment.
So we've established that we can't have surrogacy for commercial purposes.
Indeed.
But we can have, the expenses, reasonable expenses of the mom taken care of by the couple or the father or the mother.
Depending on who it is that the surrogate mother is gestating that baby
for. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes.
Right? Because I think part of the issue sometimes is that people have an affair. But it can be a mom who can't have a baby.
Yes.
Who asks another woman to have the baby on her behalf.
Mm.
It can be a couple that can't have a baby who asks another woman to have the baby on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a man who can't have a baby for whatever reasons,
mm-hmm.
and ask another woman to have a baby. Am I
yes,
getting it right?
Absolutely. Spot
okay.
on.
All right.
And I think what we need to bear in mind when we look at all of these different scenarios that you've spoken of now, all of which are valid,
yeah.
is that what the law dictates is that there must be a genetic link between one of the parents, if there is only one parent. So if the intended parent is a single person, that person's gamete needs to be used. So either sperm or egg. If it is that there is a couple, either both of their genetic material must be used for the baby that is to be born, or one of their genetic material. So there can be either a donor sperm or a donor egg in the environment where there's a couple. But in the event where there's a single person, that person's genetic material must be used. And again, I think these are the things that the legislation tries to use to bring the relationship between mother and, or parent rather, parent and baby, intended parent and baby, closer to one another, and again to avoid an environment where the commercialization of this process results in human trafficking, the creation of designer babies, wombs for hire, and the very, very controversial narratives that follow this idea of surrogacy.
Wombs for hire. Eh?
Mm.
011-883-0702 is the number to dial. 021-446-0567. Have you contemplated the idea of surrogacy in trying to get a baby, a child, both as a couple or perhaps as a single parent? I'm having this conversation with Claire Thompson, and we're looking at the legal issues, but I'm interested also to hear perhaps some of the issues that you've come across that are maybe of a moral nature, of a cultural or perhaps even religious nature. I'm interested to hear your arguments as far as that is concerned. How does it happen? How does the whole thing happen? All right. So what do I mean by the whole thing? Does the man sleep with the surrogate mother at any point? How does it work?
So the...
Because, I mean, that's the traditional way babies are made, right? So,
yes, you know. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is that when we speak about the origin of surrogacy, the earliest report of surrogacy is in the Bible. And under those circumstances, there was sexual intercourse, but a woman carried a baby on behalf of another woman. In the Children's Act...
Tell me about that.
This is what is reported, that the first instance of surrogacy is reported to have taken place in biblical times.
Okay. Do you have any references to which issue?
I don't. I could come back the next time that we have this discussion with that reference.
By the way, all of you who are avid Bible readers, if you can just perhaps remind us of which instance that would be where the first incident of surrogacy would have been. I'm just wrecking my mind. I am a follower of biblical text, so I'm trying to think in my mind which story that would have been, except maybe the Immaculate Conception. Eh?
I'm going to have a look for you if I can. Eh? Whilst we're having this conversation, I'm going to have a look and see whether I can.
All right. So in the earliest sort of understandings of surrogacy go back to ancient times, if that's what you're saying to me, right?
So I'm going to quote Google that I've had a quick look at here, and it says the earliest example of surrogacy is in the Old Testament of Genesis.
Yeah.
The story is told that Abram's wife had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The law has kept me from having children," and it goes on.
Oh, yes.
So that is said to be the first reported incident of surrogacy.
All right.
So I think when we think about that, this is not novel.
Yeah.
You know, I think when we look at the Children's Act and we see that it's dated October 2019. Oh, sorry, the children. That's the version that I've got.
Yeah.
It says Act 38 of 2005. My apologies.
Right.
It's not something that was first contemplated in 2005.
Sure.
It was first reported on or spoken of in Old Testament times. And I think when we consider that one of the reasons why this legislation came into being in South Africa was because it was taking place. Surrogacy was happening, but it was unregulated. There's a report of...
That's true. I mean, I know that culturally, at least in South African indigenous culture, it's been happening. It's been happening... It's not even maybe the idea that we're calling it surrogacy now might be the sort of light bulb moment. But it's not strange that if there is a problem biologically or anatomically, right?
Mm, yeah.
Your brother can have children for you with your wife. It's not a strange idea at all. Yeah. It's not a strange idea
No,
yeah?
No, okay? No, and it's not novel.
Absolutely.
I think that's what's important.
Yeah.
What the Children's Act has sought to do is to regulate the framework in which this happens.
Yeah.
And to create an environment where the surrogate mother is not the holder of parental rights and responsibilities, and that from the birth of that child, the intended parents acquire those parental rights and responsibilities. So those are the circumstances which the legislation seeks to create an environment where there is more certainty. Because historically, before the Children's Act, there was a need for the intended parents to adopt the child to be born or that had been born in order to confirm their parental rights and responsibilities.
You still haven't answered my question about how does it happen.
How does it happen?
Is it a sexual moment or is it IVF? How does the exchange of gametes actually take place?
So the Children's Act speaks about the artificial fertilization of the surrogate mother, and it says that no artificial fertilization of the surrogate mother can take place before the surrogate motherhood agreement has been confirmed by a court. And this is absolutely critical for people to bear in mind that are contemplating this type of procedure, is that a doctor cannot inseminate a woman or artificially inseminate or artificially fertilize a woman or implant an embryo into the surrogate mother until such time as a court has given their authority for that doctor to do so. And there are, I mean, if we think about Joburg alone, there are so many fertility clinics that are offering these services. There are so many egg and sperm donor clinics that are facilitating these opportunities for people, because if there is a reason why sperm or egg can't be used, there is a need that a donor is going to have to be used. And when we read the case law, very often the donor agency is also linking the surrogate mother to the intended parents. So there's also that relationship that exists, where the surrogate mother is then introduced to the intended parents. Again, what is critical is that that cannot be a financial transaction. There cannot be payment offered for an introduction of a surrogate mother to the intended parents by an agent. So there's heavy regulation to make sure that the commercialization aspect of this doesn't seep in.
I want to take a call quickly from Victor in Lanesia. Good evening to you, Victor.
Good evening, Paul. How are you?
My apologies, Victor. Good evening to you. I'm well, okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, Proverbs, I just wanted to... good evening, you and your guests. I just wanted to ask something and that I'm not understanding here. I was married before.
Yeah.
Then I had that ex-wife of mine, like, we really needed a baby, but didn't happen at the end of the day. So now what happened is we ended up parting ways because of such kind of things we are discussing right now, that surrogacy thing, because she never got pregnant, or she was telling me that maybe she's getting, she's miscarrying, but I couldn't see anything. Only she could show me some pictures. So, you can see this, whatever, blood or whatever, then I'm miscarrying. But I don't even know whether it's true or not. Or maybe because I'm not this kind of a gyna or what. Okay, so what happened afterwards? There was my aunt who has got a connection with those people who are doing an egg donation, right? She went there. She was given pills to boost herself. She donated the eggs, and it was successful.
Right.
But in intimacy, in sexual intimacy, she's not getting pregnant, if you get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, she's not pregnant. We parted ways, and she's staying with another guy somewhere there. Well, I don't have a problem with that, we talk. But she's not pregnant yet again. But when she donated the egg, it was successful, and she was paid for doing that. So I was thinking, because we talk each and every time, and I said, you know what, the only thing I want, even if we parted ways, I just want a kid of mine. Yeah. So she said, no, I can donate my egg. After donating my egg, then you can donate your sperm too, then maybe you can link there. So I don't know if that way it works without having sexual intercourse.
Sure. All right, Victor, much appreciated. Clear?
It's an interesting question, and I think perhaps my first question would be, my first point, I think, would be that in, rather than a donation, because a donation of eggs and a donation of sperm might be similarly achieved in a fertility type environment with a fertility expert. That if it is that a couple is not able to have a child for whatever reason, before they turn to surrogacy, it must be that the medical practitioner that is treating the couple or the mom can state that the mom to carry the baby cannot carry that baby to term. So and I think, you know, if it is that there are female reproductive organs and the person who has those female reproductive organs cannot gestate a baby and that condition is permanent and irreversible, then surrogacy becomes an option. Whether or not this couple is in that instance yet, I don't know. That would be something that the doctor would have to determine. And if a doctor was to say that and report that, then the steps after that are to contemplate whether or not surrogacy is an option for that couple. But I think first and foremost, the question is to determine whether or not this, and I'm not sure if they're a couple anymore. That wasn't 100% clear for me.
They've since parted ways.
Yeah. I think I can't take my divorce lawyer hat off ever. You know, it's just permanently with me. Or my child lawyer hat. My question to your listener would be, if it is that you are contemplating having a child with somebody that you are no longer in a relationship with because the relationship is broken down, are you comfortable with co-parenting with that person for at least the next 18 years? Mm. Is this something that you are prepared to do together with one another?
Mm-hmm.
Because the decision to have this baby when the relationship is broken down and the relationship has come to an end, that decision is a decision that's going to last a lifetime. And it might be, for example, that your listener approaches a surrogate who is prepared to act as such for him, and he gives sperm, and there is a donor egg, and that surrogate is artificially fertilized, for example, and then a baby is born, and he could be a single parent of his own child. He could adopt. He could meet somebody else and he could have a baby where there is a relationship where there is enough common ground between them in order to take this journey of parenting together the next 18 years.
I think there was another aspect to Victor's question, and it's more of a medical question to say, you know, how come it seems that she could not get pregnant through conventional sexual intimacy, but her eggs could be impregnated through artificial insemination. Mm. And my thought there is that sometimes the problem is not with the woman.
Yeah, I think that this is something that I would defer totally to a fertility expert.
Because very often. The thinking is that if we can't have a baby, the problem is with the woman.
Mm.
We've come to understand over many, many, many decades, or maybe even centuries, that it's not always true that if a couple can't fall pregnant, that it is the woman's fault, as it were.
Certainly.
So maybe those are the kinds of issues that Victor needs to go and check out more reliably from people who are in that medical business. Let's talk a little bit about the rights of the various people in this relationship. Mm. Hell, I can imagine that there's a bonding with the child from the surrogate mother. I can imagine that might be an issue. That maybe you sign whatever documents that sort of prohibit you from claiming parental rights over the child, but I can imagine that there could be instances where the surrogate mother feels such a bond to the baby, particularly because of the circumstances around the pregnancy, they may have created a situation where there is a real bond of really wanting this pregnancy to happen, and then a baby and a mom's bonding situation takes place. How is that handled from a legal perspective?
So again, I think the law tries to cater for this with the provisions of this particular section that demand that if it is that a surrogate is to act as a surrogate, that she must have a child of her own, a live child of her own, and she must have already had a viable pregnancy. And I think the one goes hand in hand with the other. And so there must be a child that has already been born to that surrogate mother. And I think it's a very interesting question that you raise, because there's a lot of literature on the pros and the cons of surrogacy. And these are one, this is one of the potential cons that are raised. And I think the question again falls very much in the realm of psychologists and people in the mental health space. What impact is this this environment going to have on both the child in the child's long-term future and on the surrogate? And very recently there was a case where the court wanted to know what impact surrogacy would potentially have on the surrogate's children, that mom comes home and has an ever-growing belly and then goes to hospital, has this baby, but the baby never comes home.
Yeah.
And so these are the things that courts are currently contemplating at the moment. What impact does the surrogacy have on not only the surrogate and the intended parents, but also the surrogate's child family or children that have been born?
And so how does that work?
So part of this process requires in-depth psychological analysis of everybody concerned. The surrogate mother, the intended parents, and those reports need to be filed as part of the application. And more recently, a determination of what the potential impact would be on the children of the surrogate mother herself. And if the children are old enough and if it's been explained to them, because a 10-year-old might have a very different understanding than a 3-year-old or a 16-year-old for that matter, and how it is that we explain to those children that mom is going to be a surrogate and this baby is not going to come home. And so these reports need to form part of the court record in order to confirm that all of the role players are in fact suitable to act in the roles that they have signed up for, so to speak.
Is there an amount of time, a legislated mandatory amount of time that the surrogate mother spends with the baby after birth?
So automatically on birth, the intended parents acquire parental rights and responsibilities. But I think what is the most interesting thing that we've seen in recent history is that as a result of the COVID pandemic, the time that the child would have spent with the surrogate mother might have been protracted as a result of many, many reasons that could have come about. Now, international surrogacy, or transnational surrogacy as it's called, very often has a commercial aspect to it, that a couple who is unable to have a child travels to another country where surrogacy is permitted, and a woman is then contracted to have a baby on their behalf. And Ukraine, interestingly, is one of the areas where commercial surrogacy is permitted. And when the Ukraine war started, the question of how could children born by a surrogate then be handed over to the commissioning parents was raised as an issue during the COVID-19 pandemic. India, that is also known to be a transnational surrogacy destination, children were born and they weren't able to be handed over to the intended parents for many, many months because of international and national lockdowns. Sure. And so I think what we initially understood to be a process where a baby would be born and then handed over to the commissioning parents, who would then bond with that baby because of the things that are happening in the world at the moment, has changed that quite significantly. And how the law catches up with that, only time will tell.
Because the question is coming in my mind that says, surrogate mom has the baby and for whatever reason is unable to hand over the baby because of COVID, because there's a war, there's whatever, and decides, I'm keeping the baby. Mm. Well, how does the law handle something of that nature?
So there are two types of surrogacy. One where the surrogate also contributes her genetic material to the pregnancy. So she donates her eggs and the sperm of the father-to-be is then used to create the pregnancy. Under those circumstances, she can elect to terminate the surrogate motherhood agreement within a period of 60 days after the child's birth. Now, if it is that donor material is used, as well as the other parents' genetic material, so the surrogate has no part whatsoever in contributing genetic material,
except in the incubation of the child.
So she carries the child.
Right.
She's pregnant with the child, but she doesn't contribute an egg. Then the agreement cannot be terminated.
It appears then that issues of, for lack of a better word, of ownership, issues of custody, are heavily vested on who is the owner of the genetic material.
I certainly think it's a very, very, very important point for parents who are intended parents and who intend to make use of a surrogate, and whose genetic material or what genetic material is used. It's a very, very important consideration. And the desire for certainty, I think, is absolutely critical, because there is a risk that if it is that the surrogate mother contributes genetic material to the creation of the embryo and ultimately the baby, she does have the election after the birth to terminate the agreement. It must be done under court supervision, but she does have the election to do so. And I think it's contained in our legislation, and it's something that must be very carefully scrutinized. And proper advice must be given when these agreements are drafted for that exact reason.
On our 702 WhatsApp line, Miriam Meads, he says, good evening, 702, just to contribute on the surrogacy issue, Mary was chosen by the Holy Spirit to be the mother of Jesus Christ. She was engaged to Joseph. Mary, being a virgin, she was the right woman to carry the baby, Jesus Christ. So I suppose the point is being made here that even the Immaculate Conception was a moment of surrogacy. Yeah,
yeah.
I understand the thinking behind that. And Ade says, good evening, Braobs and the team. Surrogacy, he says, quite deep. Well, like your guest did affirm, it dates back to ancient times. Watched a movie a few days ago about surrogacy entitled Baby at All Cost. I just think this process is unfair because the woman that carries the child will miss that life that grew in her. Like this is natural stuff, ain't it? Ade, give me a call, man. I'd really like to hear what you've got to say. Peter says, Braobs, Genesis 38, 9, 11. Says, but Onan knew that the child would not be his. So whenever he slept with his mother's wife, he spilled his semen on the ground to keep from providing offspring. This is another aspect, another case from the Bible. So it's clear that there are references to the idea of surrogacy since ancient times. I know that it's been happening on the African continent since ancient times. On the Twitter side of things. Youth for Climate Change says, Braobs, people, or Africans in particular, are known to have badimu amadlozi. So that would be the deities, God, the deities that are connected to a particular family. So he says, for surrogate offsprings, where would they draw their spiritual ancestry from? Says Youth for Climate Change. And I suppose that's more of a theological question. But that question has been answered over and over by traditional practice amongst the Bapedi people, for example. The adoption process is where you marry the child. Mm. So we call it honyala ngwana, but it's the adoption of a child. And I imagine that similar kinds of, and what that does is that it adopts you into the family, not only of the existing family, but of the family that has passed on, of the family that is yet to come. It adopts you into that community. Because the fundamental sort of theology is that your family is made up not only of the people that exist in this dimension, but of people that are yet to come, the people that are and the people that have passed on. So the marriage of a child, as it were, brings you into that community of... So that would be the theological sort of understanding of the theological that Youth for Climate 3 is concerned. So even if a baby is born, a baby can be adopted through certain processes into a family and becomes part of, and that's where they would get their ancestral sort of or spiritual ancestry from, Youth for Climate Change. But hey, it's a great conversation. Costs. How much does something like this cost?
From what I've read, it's estimated in the hundreds of thousands of
dollars. Really?
Yeah. And I think if we think about the medical procedures that are involved, the legal procedures that are involved, you know, there are an attorney needs to be briefed to bring this application to court. A psychologist needs to be appointed to do the reporting. A fertility expert needs to be appointed in order to do the artificial fertilization of the surrogate mother. There might be donor eggs or donor sperm involved. And then there is the reasonable compensation that the surrogate mother is then entitled to. So...
Is it compensation or is it still within the realm of expenses?
Because, it is expenses.
Yeah, so because it can't be compensation in the classical sense of...
Reimbursement, perhaps.
Right. Okay.
That being said, reimbursement, the payments are approved by the court. Payments that are due to be made to the surrogate are approved by the court. And it's detailed on a schedule.
Yeah.
What is it that this money is for? Prenatal vitamins, health insurance, medical visits, transport, a helper, for example, if that is needed, a nanny perhaps for the children. So those are the expenses that need to be detailed, and they need to be approved by the court. And it's not... the courts have been very, very clear in their views that they are not simply there as a checkbox.
Yeah.
They are there to scrutinize these agreements and to determine whether or not they passed muster or not.
How regularly do we find that the courts have to know about this? Or let me say the system knows about this. So my question is basically, how many surrogacies do we have a year?
So that I'm not sure of, but what I do know is that increasingly there is more and more and more case law that is reported that has become available. So we see more and more and more reported cases that where the law is shaped because of judicial hearings, because the courts are listening to these matters and they are making decisions about how it is that surrogacy happens in reality. And I think when we look at the surrogate motherhood section, it's not very long when we look at the legislation. I think surrogate motherhood could possibly be an entire piece of legislation on its own. And at one point in time, that was contemplated. But it forms part of the Children's Act. But it is not... it's not as big as the Children's Act is itself. It's just a couple of pages in this book that I have with me today.
Why do you think? Give me a call, 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Are you contemplating? Are you thinking perhaps about following the surrogacy route? Give me a call and tell me what are your misgivings? What are your issues? What are your thoughts? What are the things that you are concerned about in this journey, should you follow it? I'd be interested to take your calls on that. 011-883-0702. Why do you think there continues to be... I know of people that are thinking about it. I know there are people that are actually listening right now.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that people would be reticent to talk about it? Why do you think that it has not yet been a mainstream conversation yet?
I think it's one of those very deeply personal...
Yeah.
Parts of our law, and I think, and our lives, you know, let's put the law aside for a moment. I think it's a deeply, deeply personal part of our lives. And I think having a conversation about fertility still remains really, really difficult for some people, and some communities. And I mean, I think it is becoming more and more mainstream when we think about the number of American celebrities, for example, who've used surrogacy in order to have their children.
Yeah.
It's becoming more and more and more in the public eye. But I still think, it's still a difficult conversation to have for a lot of people.
I know that there's a reality TV show. Ntate, you remind me what the title of the reality TV show is, but I know that celebrity sort of host and he's doing a show now about cooking, I think, has twins. Is it? Moshe, I think, is his name. And his story has been beautifully, tastefully told, but it does involve some of the issues where the surrogate mom is having certain emotional connections, because the surrogate mom still has contact with the babies, right? And I think that can be problematic.
So that all needs to be
And she is married, and there is the relationship between her and her husband is taking a bit of strain. I remember just watching that part of the whole thing as they tell the story of some of the difficulties that go to beautiful babies. Beautiful babies.
I want to watch this.
And they are Moshe's little girls, right? And there are issues. And I think it's a brilliant way of mainstreaming this conversation because it's sometimes very hard for a very conservative society like South Africa, because South Africa thinks we're out there, but we're very conservative, to have conversations around this.
I'd also be interested to hear if there are any surrogate mothers who would be open to sharing some of, you know, some of the questions that have been asked about how is it that you hand over this baby?
Sure.
You know, I think it'd be interesting to hear if there is a surrogate mother.
Yeah, yeah.
Who has acted as such.
One of the things that becomes, for me, an interesting question is that does the mother who successfully hands over the baby to the commissioning parents, do they miss the baby? Do you know those kinds of emotional, psychological things? And are there arrangements sometimes that are made for the surrogate mom to see the babies, visit with the babies? Is that kind of thing permissible? Yeah. Does it happen?
It could be in the context of this agreement that is court approved. Many different types of arrangements could be made. But I think what, again, we must bear in mind is that if a person has involvement in a child's life and protracted involvement in a child's life, it's not something that can be given and then just taken away on a whim.
Yeah.
If it is that it is intended that there is a long-term relationship where the surrogate mother is going to always form a part of this child's life, then it can form part of the agreement. But if it is that it's not going to be a reality that is feasible for those commissioning parents. And I think, again, like so many conversations we have, it requires an honest, honest look at what it is that you want for your future. And what might feel good now might not be what actually people intend. And I think it's something that must be very, very carefully considered before contact is afforded to any third party, in a surrogate mother or otherwise.
So some comments directed at you. Audacity to Succeed says, the surrogacy conversation, it's very complex, and really admire the way Claire is navigating it. Thank you.
That's very kind.
Doris says, I love the sincerity and empathy of your guest, Doris from Gordon's Bay. And I suppose as we close, it is one issue that requires a lot of humanity in the way that we approach it, right?
Absolutely. There's so much. I think so much of our humanity is contained in this conversation.
Claire Thompson, specialist family law practitioner at Wits Incorporated. Thank you very much for joining us. How do people get in touch with you?
People can give us a call on 011-0100 or visit our website at www.witsinc.co.za.